This is Gilbert Andrew Garcia with a tip from Gilbert, talk, inspiration, and prayer. Listen to my show every Monday from 11 to 12 on KWWJ, 1360 AM, KYOK, 1140 AM, KCOH at 1230KCOH.com, Sengit Radio at 95.1 FM, 1460 AM, and Latino Sports, KEYH, 850 AM. Call in at 832-570-8075 and follow me on social media. See you then. All right, Houston, Harris County, you got me, Gilbert Garcia, with a tip for me. Another tip for me, talk, inspiration, and prayer. So thank you for having me, as we all know. Thank you, studio audience. And we have a really good guest today, actually fantastic guest. And I've known him, and I will tell you, if there's anyone who has devoted more time in such more intensity in such a short period of time, it's Mike Nichols, of course, who is the housing director for the city of Houston. Mr. Nichols, welcome to the show.
Gilbert, it's so good to be here, and I'm excited to talk about what we're doing at the housing department, what the city of Houston is doing, and what the audience listeners can do about a big issue, which is affordable housing and homelessness.
Let's talk about that. I want to go through it all. Before we do that, let me ask you something. You are such an accomplished person. And I really mean that sincerely, because you were essentially C-suite at a big major company, all these sorts of things. When you were young, Mike, out there, did you ever think you'd be here? Did you ever think you'd have the success that you had? And did you ever think you'd be solving some of the biggest issues of our time?
You know, I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, and during the civil rights movement. And one of the things, even as a child, I knew there were big issues that people could come together and work and solve. And I would say that I was thought I'd be here more than I thought I'd be in a business corporation helping run that. And so what I did in my life is I thought I was always going to be in public service. And at age of 29, after two terms in the Georgia legislature, I realized I needed to make a living to take care of my kids. Did that for 30 years. As soon as I could retire in 2010, I began trying to give back to the community.
You know, the funny thing is, you're probably working harder now. Right? Am I right? Now that you're retired, than you were working when you were working.
I worked pretty hard when I was working. When I joined Cisco Corporation, we had about $800 million in sales. And when I left, we had almost $50 billion in sales.
Come on. That's fantastic.
And my kids often said that I missed their childhood, and I said, yeah, I was on the parade.
Yeah, I understand. But you really have, it's been remarkable. Let's take a step back, because you really got into the Coalition for the Homeless, et cetera, really under Merrick Turner's sort of time period. Am I right?
That's correct. But I had done volunteer work for Mayor Wright and Mayor Parker, and then my first venture into nonprofits was with the Houston Parks Board under Mayor Turner, where we built out about 150 miles of bike lanes. And so when they called to say, would I become the interim CEO of the Coalition for the Homeless, I actually thought, you know, I didn't have a big focus on homelessness ever in my life. But at the time, my youngest daughter of four children was in Seattle as a homeless outreach worker.
No kidding.
And every night she would call me about 7 o'clock our time, 9 or 10 o'clock our time, and yell at me and say, Dad, what kind of country did he leave when we had let 90-year-old women sleep on the street? Mm-hmm. And every night she would say that. Yeah. And so when the mayor called, I said, I really don't have a choice but to step forward. And that 1 year moved into 5 years.
Well, you know what? That's a great story. The interesting thing about the whole Coalition for the Homeless is, and everybody knows I ran for mayor and I had a great time. And I learned a lot about the issue of homeless, because it's a very complex issue. It's not as easy as, well, let's just get them someplace to stay. It's not so easy. During your term at the Coalition, y'all had enormous success, whether it was the sobering centers, whether it's a navigation area. I mean, y'all really had a bunch of success. Tell the listeners a little bit about that success, because it's my understanding, and as I did my research, that Houston became a model for the country.
That's correct. What we did is we had focus on housing. And what we learned is that, and this goes back to 2011 under Mayor Parker, what we learned, we should step back, in 2011 under Mayor Parker, two big decisions were made. The first big decision was to focus on housing people into real apartments with services and rent subsidy and do that as quickly as possible. So since 2011, the coalition and its partners, great partners throughout the city, including Search and Salvation Army and many, many others, has housed over 30,000 people into housing, which is not temporary. It means a lock and a key and a lease in their name. In 2018, when I came aboard, we were coming out of a little bit of a trough because of Hurricane Harvey. And the amount of homelessness really spiked under Hurricane Harvey because of the hurricane, not just because of economics or mental health or other issues. So it spiked. And when it came into us after that, then we had severe financial problems, but we began working our way out of that. And then COVID hit. And with COVID came additional funding from the federal government. And the city and the county really did a great job of braiding that funding to house more than 5,000 people, more than 10,000 people. And because of that funding, it really ramped up. We were able to go into encampments. My favorite story is the encampment on the corner of I-45 South downtown at Allen Parkway. And there was a big encampment there, about 50 people living there. Went in, the team and all the nonprofits worked together. We told the folks about housing. We had housing available for them. And within 3 weeks, 39 of those 51 people were in housing.
Wow.
Only two had, they went out and did something different. So 49 of 51 accepted it. And of those people, 90% remained in housing out of the homeless response system. And that's been typical of this program. Well, it really says more about the people experiencing homelessness, which is that what we found is that when people have housing with support services, I mean, the support services are very important. They will stay in that at, again, an 80% plus rate because that's how they get stability. And that was a great program, but there's a but to that. When you ran for mayor and Mayor Whitmire ran for mayor, it was clear that there were some other issues. Mm-hmm. Three big issues were seen during that campaign. One is too many people had to wait for their housing on the street. That was accurate. People were waiting 30, 60, 90 days and more on the street for housing. Second problem, mental health substance issues. There just wasn't enough focus on mental health and substance issues. There weren't places that people who were living on the street could go to begin to solve those problems as they entered housing. And the third was very obvious, that the federal money would run out, mm-hmm. that we needed to find sustainable funding. And that's what the candidates all found, and Mayor Whitmire certainly focused on. And so when he called me and said, Mike, you're going to be the director of housing and community development, he said, I do want you to stay with the homelessness issues, because that is one of my top three issues that we need to solve.
Amen. Amen to him and to you. We have a caller already. Was there a Miss Collins on there?
Miss Collins.
Where are there?
Yes, I'm here.
Will you have me, Gilbert Garcia, with a tip for me? And we have, of course, our housing director. What do you got for one of us, either one of us, or anything you got?
Well, I experienced Hurricane Harvey. We are just sitting back in our home, probably maybe 6 months of 2 years being back in our home. It took us 7 years to get back. And we went through the homeless portion of it, where Harris County took us off of their housing program. And luckily, friends took me in. But I have had that experience, but for the most part, they managed the money pretty well when it came to keeping you with a roof over your head while you were trying to figure out what you were going to do with your home.
No, wonderful. So you had a good experience.
Yes.
Somewhat. Not at the end, but at the beginning, yes.
Well, amen. Well, let me ask you this. How are you doing now?
I was given your number because I was referred to you by Morris Broussard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing very well now because my daughter was killed on March 21st, 2025. And I basically am experiencing a very bad botched investigation concerning her death. And I was reaching out to you for help.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't you call me after the show and let me see what we can do to help?
I sure will. And if there's anything I can do to help, I've worked in AmeriCorps for over 5 years as a VISTA and a VISTA leader. And I love working the coalitions with these kind of causes. If it's things that I might be able to add or do, I would be happy to do so.
Wonderful. And I'm really, really sorry about your loss. And I look forward to seeing what we can do to help.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Do we have another caller there? Thank you, Ms. Collins. I think we had another caller. Would you show me that name there, please?
Okay.
Ms. Producer?
Dominic.
Dominic. Dominic, are you there? Dominic.
Here.
Okay, we lost him. That's okay.
Gilbert, let me to speak to Ms. Collins' comment about timing. Dominic? It is a disappointment to me about the slow venture in all of the federal programs around disaster. Harvey was 2017. We call that in the money we have, which the city got about $650 million. The state got another $650. It has taken 6 and 7 years to fully spend that money. The reason is clear to me, which is heavy bureaucracy. And so people have severe issues on that. All of the federal money that the city gets, the state gets, the county gets, is not cash. It is a reimbursement program that gives us the right to spend the money after they approve the programs, and then you spend the money, and then you have to get reimbursed. And often there's tiny, tiny mistakes that keep the federal government from reimbursing the city and county. So it's important for people to know that part of the issue is the way the federal government handles disaster relief and putting really all of the risk on local government.
Very interesting. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I mean, what we really need is someone like you at the federal level, because someone needs to get in there and, for lack of a better word, I want to say, streamline it. Absolutely. Get in there and really understand the issue and to figure out how we can make it better rather than just pointing the finger and all those kinds of things.
Absolutely. In affordable housing is the same thing, Gilbert. You've worked a lot in real life on this. What we found is that when federal dollars are involved, it raises the cost per unit of an apartment building by about $100,000. I can show people the way. It's very simple how we reduce that, rather than using tax credits and these other complex funding streams to go directly to mezzanine construction financing. We could get exactly the same for much fewer dollars. And it's when you dig into it, the expense is really banks, lawyers, accountants taking and bureaucrats taking their fair share instead of going directly to the house.
Was itchy. I had an experience similar when I was at Metro Chair, as you know, and then Karen Prattman, I know, is a good friend of yours. She was a good friend of mine, and she was on the board with me, et cetera. I remember we were deep in the middle of trying to get the full funding grant agreement and all of those things. And the amount of work required to get that full funding grant agreement, it was $900 million. But we had to spend almost $150 million on various studies and engineering things. And they went a tweaks and more things. And then one of our members of Congress wanted tweaks. And by the time it was all said and done, it's like, well, golly, would we have been better off starting ground zero and doing it on our own? And it was really, it was almost a break even. It really was. Now, had we done it ground zero, maybe we would have done something differently, but we were already deep in the process. But I did a lot of research on it. I was like, you know what? It may have been better next time to go on our own. Have you ever felt that? Or, I mean, do you understand? Is that resonating with you?
It absolutely resonates with me. But do remember that other than funding these processes to get reimbursed, the city and the county spend very little general funds on homelessness or housing. It's really all federal funds. In so many ways, we, the taxpayers, really want city government to work first.
That's right.
But the city government relies so heavily on property taxes, which is our least favorite tax. Mm-hmm. And the federal government has this wonderful taxing system, and it's very hard to bring that money locally. It is a complex issue. I feel the same thing about the state, the way the state handles the taxing. But the citizens really want their local government to have control. Mm-hmm. And yet we have the hardest time raising funds to do the work that's necessary that impact us day in, day out.
Well, and the other thing that's not so logical, and if there's another caller, just put that up there for me, producer, is when the state tries to handcuff the local governments and say, okay, you can only raise taxes for this, you know, the population growth, et cetera, instead of thinking about what are the needs that you have and how can you reinvest and get a return on the investment of the taxpayers' funds? And they don't think that way. They're just like, how can I handcuff the city?
Well, let me give you a favorite example of that is the state of Texas has made a ridiculous decision to not take Medicaid, increase the number of people in Medicaid. It's a $10 billion loss to the state of Texas. But we, the taxpayers of the urban areas, pay a significant amount of money for homelessness in Harris Center and Harris Health. And that should be funded by Medicaid expansion like every other state.
It makes no sense, though, when you really try to break it down and understand politics. I understand politics. But at the end of the day, something should be more important than politics, which is dollars and cents for the people.
I would consider myself a fiscal conservative. Mm-hmm. And when I make this argument about homelessness, I'll tell you my basic argument. We, the homeless response system, city, county, working together, can house somebody in a real apartment, lock, key, roof over their head, not a temporary home, not a tent. We can put them, give them a lease. We can give them rent subsidy and professional case management for $25,000 per year.
That's got to be a pittance compared to what the cost is for them in the system. I didn't mean to cut you.
No. You put them in transitional housing. It's about $40,000 per person per year. Jail's about $45,000. And again, about 3,000 of the people who were of the 10,000 people in Harris County Jail will say they were homeless. And then to keep them on the street is an astronomical number. The most recent one I had is about $86,000 per person on the street. Most of that in emergency health care. That they're going into the hospital 8-10 times a day. We just now helped a woman into a mental health facility. She had 400 touch points with police and healthcare over the last year.
400. My goodness.
And she just needed some mental health care at much lower cost than what she had done. Go to the emergency rooms and talk to the emergency room docs, and they will say there's nothing more frustrating than a person coming in who has a mental health substance issue, is homeless, and then what can they do for them? They can clean up their cuts. They can take the maggots out of their sores, and that's all. Which there really needs to be something more, and the housing with services is better. And think about the cost of that emergency health care. And for the most part, it is borne by the taxpayers of Harris County who set up and help Harris Health pay for it. And when you go to the hospital yourself, and you look at that bill and go, oh my gosh, you're paying part of that uncompensated care.
You know, what's interesting about that is you and I are business people. It makes perfect business sense to say, what makes more sense? Get them into the system and get them through the system and get them housed for $25,000 or all this other, you know, on society, which is almost unlimited. That makes all the sense in the world.
The problem is when you get to something like the legislature and they are looking at this, they have this reaction. I don't really give somebody something for nothing. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. I understand that because a big part of our programming is getting people back to work. And of course people want to work, but you got to get them stabilized first. You can't go to work if you're sleeping on the streets. It's very hard.
That's right.
Some people do it. They're amazing. But it's very hard. And for that reason, we have to get over that and think it's costing us money just to leave room on the street. A lot of money.
And that doesn't even put in the feeling of people in the neighborhood that don't feel safe, all those things. They're going to Metro and just riding it endlessly. I mean, when it's too hot or if it's too cold, I mean, it doesn't even factor in any of that.
We had a meeting with the CEO of Metro, a fine man, really focused. and he was talking about the expense of homelessness to Metro. And he said he believes that the number one issue that keeps people from riding Metro is the discomfort of riding with people who have mental health problems.
Well, I would tell you on that note, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I apologize. Is we had looked at one time, and one of my dreams was to make Metro free. Mm-hmm. Because I just thought, when you look at the subsidy, meaning the dollar and change that people ride, it would raise about $40 million, which in the Metro budget, which is about almost $2 billion, is really small. It's like, well, why don't you just make it free? And then everyone can just get on and off and just, but you know what? Because I learned the homeless would be all on there and then nobody would want to ride. In other words, it's a great idea, but having some cost is a deterrent from that. And I hate to say that because I understand people wanting to have some temporary shelter, but that's why we couldn't do it.
But that's a very expensive temporary shelter.
Isn't that right? That's exactly right.
And Metro was very appropriate when they gave the city $10 million this year to spend on helping people move out of the homeless system into homes and shelters. Because if we could actually solve that problem for Metro, everything would change and it'd be much better. It is a joint effort, and I give a lot of credit to, again, Houston's unique collaborative work on homelessness between Metro, Harris Center for Mental Health and ADD, Harris Health, Harris County, City, and more than 100 nonprofits. And our tremendous philanthropic community that's kept this program push forward.
Amen. And Tom Jason's, of course, you're referring to at Metro. He's the CEO there. What a great guy. I've known him a very long time. We have a Courtney on the line. Is there a Courtney on the line?
Hello, I'm here.
Courtney, you have me, Gilbert Garcia, the tip from you with Mike Nichols, of course, our housing director, and homeless extraordinaire expert. What do you got for us?
Yes, I just have a quick question. First off, good morning. And then I went to very ridiculous. I wanted to ask, I know that you have 3 decades worth of food distribution work underneath your belt. I really just wanted to know, how does that tie into and like your new line of work at the housing directory?
It's a great question. And I would say there are 2 big issues. One is dollars and cents. When Gilbert was kind to say I was a homelessness expert, I don't consider myself homeless. It's a homelessness expert. There are people who've done this their whole career. I don't know anything except what I see in the data, which is this 80% success rate, and what I see in the dollars and cents. I don't mean to be hard about this. I'm not personally as focused on the individuals as I am on moving a significant number of people off our streets, out of our emergency rooms, and into a better life in housing. That's really my expertise. And I would say the food business is very similar. Give me an example. In food distribution, Cisco tried very hard to get to 100% what a customer wanted, we wanted them to have. What we found is to get from 99 or 98 to 100 was very expensive and very difficult. And if we would set our sights and make sure the customer was comfortable with the percentage, it would work. I think we as citizens should be comfortable that if we put people in housing and if we give them the right kind of case management and if we have the mental health capabilities, if we get 85-90% that work, we should be excited about that.
That's a home run. That is a home run.
Double home run.
Yep.
But it's a matter of, yep. but it's a matter of accepting it's not perfect for everybody. Now, we're going to try to work. We're going to try to get that mental health system better. We're going to try to get the healthcare system better. But it's not going to work for everybody. But it's all driven off data and really what it is financially feasible. One other thing I'll throw out as we talk about this data and something feasible. In Houston, Texas, we do not have a health respite facility. If somebody gets out of the hospital and is homeless, and they just had a knee replaced or a heart valve put in, and they're homeless, there's no place for them to rest and go to. And that's a waste of money to the taxpayer, to the insurer, to the hospitals.
They're just, the hospitals just says, okay, well done, and there's the door.
Well, they have social workers that they pay, which I'm sure do a good job, but there's no place.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, my challenge to the hospitals has always been, you need to build a respite facility, fund it, and it will save you money. Mm-hmm. But it's getting financial, and it's looking at the bigger picture. I guess I say that's what I learned from in the food business, is look at the bigger picture, look at how the money's spent, and do your best job. Don't let the perfect get in the way of the good.
Well, Thea, that's why you're an expert, because you look at solving problems differently than what people have done in the past. Because, you know, the definition of insanity, right, is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And being data-driven to solve problems is really part of the solution. Courtney, what say you? What else do you got for us?
I also have another question. I was wondering, what are just some different companies that you're going to implement or even program that are on the bit at the house?
You broke up. Just repeat that one more time. You broke up a little bit. What are some of the other new programs on the horizon? Is that what you mean?
Yes, sir. That's what I said.
Okay.
Well, we do have some exciting programs on the horizon, even with the concern about where the federal government's going. This month, we've already issued funding from the DR-17, which is Harvey, of $19 million for down payment assistance. And this is significant. It's up to $225,000 per home for people who are looking for a home and meeting the guidelines. We already have, bear with me, 259 people who've applied for this program. It does go through a rigorous process to make sure that if they get this down payment plan, they can get a mortgage and they can have a home. Very exciting program. From the dollars, that goes all the way back to 17, from the dollars we got from the freeze, when the name of the freeze.
Freezing. You understand.
In 2021, we got $50 million from the federal government. $30 million is growing. $40 million is growing to home repairs for individuals whose homes are still damaged from the 2021 flood. And we're very excited about that program. That will be very meaningful. We have, I think, 150 people who've already applied for that. Those are two big programs. And last is the disaster from 24 Barrel and the Derecho. We're looking for city council approval next week for a $313 million federal grant. That $100 million will go to generators at our sewage facilities, our water facilities, our places that people go to, multi-service centers that they go to when the electricity is down, fire stations, et cetera. $100 million for generators for those places, $41 million more for homelessness, $100 million more for housing. Half will go to multifamily housing for building more units for affordable housing, and half will go to home repair.
That is just fantastic. You are busy. You are busy. I mean, I really mean it. Thank God you're there. Courtney, any other questions you got? All right, Courtney. Okay, we got a Mr. Patel there, and then I'm going to come back to some questions for you there, Mike. Mr. Patel, are you there?
Hello.
Mr. Patel, can you hear me?
Hi, yes, I am very well. Loud and clear.
Well, great. You got me, Gilbert Garcia, the tip for me, talk, inspiration, and prayer, with Mr. Mike Nichols, of course, who is our housing director, and I'm just got to say it, he's really one of the foremost experts on really looking at homelessness and helping SORA.
I have heard that in his talk. Basically, I have myself lived as a homeless by choice. I'm a world traveler who is traveling across the world. And I've seen a problem in Baytown. I was living there. And I decided all of a sudden that let me live this life. How we feel in Houston or Texas, how it feels to live homeless under the rain. And I came up with a research paper just yesterday I published and today I had this show. So kudos to you, director.
So I apologize. I didn't quite hear the question. Did you have a question, though? So I understand that
you're a larger person.
Go ahead.
Yes. I'm a world traveler
yes.
who wish to help homeless I can't, you know, say homeless, unhomed people, unhoused people, those who are unfortunate. I want to help them. So how you can employ me, my skills? I'm not an American. I'm Indian living in Mexico. I speak Spanish and 14 other languages. So how can I help you, sir?
Well, I look forward to reading your paper. One of the things we want and we need, really need, is people with what we call lived experience to help us solve these problems and make sure that we're doing the right things for the right answers.
Perfect, sir.
Send us your paper. Call my number. Send it to me, and I can get it to Mr. Nichols.
Oh, no,
by
this way.
I'm sending it now. I'm sending it now.
And you are calling from Mexico right now?
No, I'm right now in Houston. I was living in Baytown since 130 days. I have lived like a homeless. I have not done even toothbrush. Brush. I have not used brush.
You're definitely experiencing it all. Well, we have here is Jake now.
Other than drugs, I have done everything.
Well, that's incredible. Send us the information, and we'll go from there.
Sure, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patel. That was an interesting call.
Well, the reason I'm smiling, Gilbert, is Houston Grand Opera put on an opera called Rin City about homelessness maybe 2 years ago, and it was exceptional. It was just exceptional. One of the characters was a Mr. Patel. And this Mr. Patel was much like this man. It's so interesting that he didn't see himself like he was a pitiful character.
Right.
He really saw himself as a rural traveler.
Very interesting.
And one of the songs that he sings is about when he finally gets his housing and about how exceptional it is. But it was an opera about homelessness that I wish everybody had seen it. They served it to about maybe 3,000 or 4,000 people, but it's an exceptional artistic experience.
Wow. Where you go? We need more of that, because the more we can educate the public about the real issues, the more we can solve them. Because I think there's just a stereotype like, oh, they want to be there. Oh, you know, you hear those things. And I have another issue I want to bring up to you. But first, we have another caller. Dominic, are you there?
Rescue, let me get outside. Oh, my phone, Jacob. Can you hear me?
He can hear you, my friend. You got me, Gilbert Percy, okay. With Mike Nichols.
Okay, I'm inside. It's in the boat, he's only around. Well, this is how it goes. Like, I'm tied right to Metro. And what y'all talk about with Metro is spot on. And people are, it's even worse in some places. Now we have people sleeping in the trains and the buses. They're also burying themselves in bus stops. But
I had the routine with the new team for Metro Police, DNTM,
and we had Buzz ridden the red line, and I was showing him where the Pond Explorer on the red line, where homelessness and panhandling, and basically the new team has taken you on, like you did, Bill, when you were here. He knew us right. You know who I'm talking about. We're on. I was seeing something on Prince, twice I was separate. And you can rest timer and whatever. You have 3130, which goes right through the roads. I'm not seeing homelessness, particularly in River Oaks and Upper Kirby, which is becoming more or less like a Rodeo Drive in Los Angeles. So my thing is, why aren't you not seeing people setting up camps there? To me, that would be the antithesis on the problem we have, the ultra rich versus the ultra poor. So,
is it something about River Oaks that these
people are going to? Now, it might be by nature, but they're getting better enforcement than the rich. Hey, I got problems with that. I didn't get anything like that. So, like Diane Butters once told me, she said, perception study will shit everything.
Well, then, let me...
And lastly, the downtown civility ordinance. Well, I like the idea, but my thing is the timing of it. You know, we're coming up with World Cup 26. I certainly don't want this to be drift clear downtown for the guests, and we forget about people who want to see it. Houston, that's MC Hall, Council Chambers, and this is done after all, still remembering. And I think one other thing is, we want people to be active, but I'm afraid that some of the homeless people are such a bad shape that to the actual careful saving I need a nursing home the rest of their lives or some assisted living. How does that need to be part of the mix? Gil, Dreis, and let me talk. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, my friend. I'm going to break that down, if I could, Mike, to two things. The first is there a connection between different neighborhoods and homelessness? I mean, is it such a thing as obvious as there are certain areas that have higher property values than others, and therefore there's not homeless there? Is it really that clear?
I will say that it's just been 15 months with the city and with the coalition. The determination of where to clear encampments is not a political determination. It's not an economic determination based on where the encampments are. It is based on the size of the encampments, and that's really been the focus. The biggest encampments go first. That goes to this issue about the civility ordinance. Member of neighborhoods have the civility ordinance. What happened downtown is we said we're going to put in the civility ordinance that people cannot sleep in town, which they have been able to do and keep all their stuff there. It is the reason it's chosen is because that's where the largest number of people were sleeping. And that's the reason the focus was on downtown. That's the first place we focused that wasn't an encampment. It was just on the street. So I'm very clear that it's not based on economics or invokes of economics or politics. It is based on where the lawns are on Metro, because people want to have that opportunity in Metro who are experiencing homelessness. And it is based on where there's raw land that's somehow separated. Mm-hmm. That's why so much of it is in the TxDOT right of ways.
Well, when you look at things like the civility ordinance, so let's say, the enforcement is somehow but you get them and you have them move. Do they just go somewhere else? What happens?
It's been very interesting on that. When we cleared the major encampments, we cleared a little major encampment along the bike ways, and we got some comments about, these people have been just displaced and moved somewhere else. That's not accurate. When the city county programs do encampments and make sure they go to housing, again, 80 to 90% go to housing. 10 or 15% may go other places. In the civility ordinance from downtown, we're not going to just move people out so they move to the further neighborhoods. We are going to move them to housing. Oh, we're going to give them that opportunity. So when the law enforcement officer or an outreach worker sees somebody sleeping on the street, they will go up to them and say, "You can't sleep here. We will take you to the Houston Recovery Center. We will take you to Star of Hope, Salvation Army, to other places, Navigation Center, but you can't sleep here." And again, that's not a mean thing. That's a start. Earlier, a caller said, don't call them homeless. He's right.
Yep.
Well, what I say is people experiencing homelessness, because homelessness is not a personality. It's not a definition of who someone is. People are homeless for a number of reasons, but if they're given housing, it is temporary. It is a temporary designation, not a permanent designation.
What's interesting about that is and you'll probably know it, but there was I don't remember if it was a Hobby Center poll or a Kinder study or something, but it talked about Houstonians, and I was shocked at the number of people who could not afford some sort of, whether it's $400, some emergency. And when you hear that, you think, well, my goodness, if you cannot afford a $400 emergency, you're really one check away from homelessness. Am I right?
It is a bad issue. And again, it's a complicated issue because people work to solve homelessness. But we have a bigger problem in this country, and that's poverty. Again, the statistic is that over 40% of the people in Harris County do not have $400 for an emergency. That is one broken arm. That's two flat tires. Neva 3 year.
Yep.
It is not very much. And that's right. And that's why we believe the nation in evictions. Harris County is number one in the nation in evictions. We do have a poverty problem. And I want to say one other one. when we did our study of panhandlers at the coalition, what we found is about 50% were experiencing homelessness. The other 50% were desperately poor. These were people with disabilities who were living in boarding houses, and they were getting between $700 and $900 per month from their Social Security disability check. That number has not increased in 50 years.
Wow.
And to expect people to, $700 and $900, what they do is they turn that check over to the boarding house, and then they go out and panhandle for that hamburger, that pack of cigarettes, the beer, whatever ants all of us want with our extra money. Without it, they have nothing. They do have a bed. They do have a place, but it is a very small amount, federal funded, Social Security disability. And my concern is that that number of people who get that will actually decrease, and we'll have more people experiencing desperate homelessness, not just desperate poverty.
Well, the other thing, do we have another caller there? Let me see. I want to come up to another issue here just a second here. Let me see. Is there a Maya there? Maya, are you there? Can you hear me, Maya? Hold on. I don't think we hear you. Just give me one second. We may have a technical issue there. Maya, you got me. Gilbert Garcia, tip for me. Hold on a minute. Maya, anything? Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you, Maya. Maya, go ahead. Go ahead. You got me a tip from me.
Hi. Thank you both so much for your time. I just had a quick question. So what are you both most optimistic about when you think of Houston's future housing landscape?
Mike, what do you think? What are you optimistic at?
A pessimistic fact that we had. The Kendall Institute did do a study that showed that Houston was one of the cities with the fewest available units for people who make 30% and below AMI, average income, 30%. These are poor people. And it's very hard. So there's a lot of pessimism there. The optimism comes from the collaboration between the city and the county and philanthropy. Philanthropy has funded a study, Harris County, City of Houston study on how to build more affordable housing. So I am more optimistic about that. It does concern me, along with a number of other things, which is that for example, insurance rates for apartment owners have increased to over $200 per month per apartment.
Wow.
And of course, that means that is passed on to other people. There's lots to be pessimistic about. But I'd say this study is something to be optimistic about. And then Houstonians really want to have affordable housing available. They want to do everything they can to do that. The issues around zoning and even NIMBYism. I find that there's much less NIMBYism because people understand we need affordable housing.
And this NIMBYism, of course, is the whole not my backyard, meaning I may be for affordable housing, but I just don't want it in my neighborhood. That's that type of attitude. But let me just also say, I can tell you why I'm optimistic, because Mike Nichols is there. I'm telling you, that's why I'm optimistic, because, again, it takes a different mindset to tackle these long-term problems. And we've got to look at things differently and look at everything holistically. And one thing I learned, because I experimented, which I probably shouldn't have done, on a couple of units of affordable housing, the first thing I realized is how expensive affordable housing is. Some of these areas that I looked at, affordable housing is almost $300,000 a house. And I thought to myself, who can afford that with 7% mortgage rates? So that was number one. Number two, and I'm not throwing a stone at anybody, but at the end of the day, the permitting took a long time.
Absolutely.
It took almost a year for me to try to get permits to build affordable housing. So I think you got to look at this holistically, not just a silo of what can I do with affordable housing or what can I do with homelessness, but the whole everything, the ecosystem. So what else do you got for us there?
First of all, thank you so much. That was very insightful. And you were talking about partnerships with different community organizations. I guess if you could go more into depth of the kind of partnerships that you have, or whether that be with nonprofits, developers, or community groups that have been very valuable to HCD's work.
Thank you, Mike. You know what, Mike? Why don't we take this way, if you don't mind? Explain what the Coalition for the Homeless really is. The whole, because I, you know, the Coalition, what are the groups and how did it come together?
In 1984, the Coalition for the Homeless was started by the three amigos, Reverend Lawson, Archbishop Ferenczia, and Rabbi Sam Karp, because they said we need something that focuses on homelessness. In 2011, it really began to boom because the federal government came to Houston and said, you have one of the worst problems in homelessness in the nation, and you got to do something about it. And Marlise Parker, who has relatives who've experienced homelessness, said she was going to stand up and do something about it. And what that was to form a committee of philanthropy, nonprofits, and government entities to set up the Ray Home. And then they chose a lead agency for this effort, and that was the Coalition for the Homeless. And they're the lead agency representing more than 100 nonprofits who work together. They also file for our federal funding for homelessness under what's called a continuum of care grant. And that grant has increased from $23 million a year to $70 million a year. So we're lucky in Houston to have a very effective Coalition for the Homelessness. When I have visited Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Anchorage, Chicago, Atlanta, in New York, we are way ahead of them because of the leadership of our lead agency and the way nonprofits have worked together. In 2011, nonprofits had to make a decision what was going to be their expertise. The search was a great example. Tal Costas, who now has my job in the county, ran search, and then she made a tough decision to move out of 10 or 12 lanes of helping people in need to homelessness focused on outreach and focused on support services for people in apartments. And that has, and then their kindergarten. And that has been a huge change. And by focusing, they've been much more effective. And that was true with a number of other nonprofits.
Wonderful. You know what? Thank God for these people, right? That really are coming together. Normally you get territorialism and all this sort of BS, but here they are saying, we've got a problem. Let's check egos at the door and let's all fight for more money and to help and coordinate action. What a great thing.
Well, now I will say in Houston, on homelessness, the city and the county partnership is outstanding. It is an example for many, many issues between the city and the county, and something that I hope people look at and say, how can we expand this to other issues?
That is fantastic. Now, Maya, thank you for that. I know we have State Representative Ron Reynolds. Ron, are you there? Representative.
I am here, Gilbert. I am here, brother.
Well, I appreciate you for calling in. I have, of course, Mr. Mike Nichols, who I know you probably know, of course, well. And, of course, he's our housing director. But let me ask you this. Where the heck are you guys right now? What's going on? Where are you?
Gilbert, I can't give you my exact location, but I can tell you we are right from Texas. We are in Illinois, and I'm with your homegirl, my colleague, Representative Christina Morales, and others. We are here together in solidarity to stand up for our Black and Brown communities that have specifically been targeted with a racial gerrymander, and we're here to fight and stand up against the Abbott Trump Texas takeover.
Now, let me ask you this. I know we only got a few minutes because I know how busy you are. How long do you think this is going to be? I mean, did you just like pack up one bag or are you like,
we packed enough so the re-team be ready to kill this first special session, and then we'll reassess it if Governor Abbott calls a second special session. So we can always go to the clearers, wash clothes, do you got to do, buy numerous. Gilbert, you know, you got a lot of money. Everybody said, we need some wardrobe, man. But no, seriously, we're here to do whatever it takes. We don't know how long we're going to be away from Texas. If you recall, last through the quorum in 2021 and went to D.C., we were there for 38 days. We didn't know when the rough and we're going to be there for 38 days. We didn't know who we were going to be there for 2 days. But it turned into, and we were staying longer had, you know, some people not run back and broke quorum, you know, getting, the, you know, we're back and allow them to have a quorum. So we're here as long as it takes. That's what I can tell you. There's no time certain. There's no date on the calendar. I kissed my kids when I had to leave and explain to them that Betty's going to be gone for a while. you know, they understand the sacrifice, man. It's a sacrifice, but that's what we signed up for. And I'm going to continue to do what I can for Texans.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, though, what is different from that experience of 21 is now y'all are going to be fined $500 a day.
A day, yeah, you're absolutely right. And on top of that, we could be expelled. Governor Abbott has already made it clear that if we don't show up today at 3 o'clock when he gavels in, he's going to move to remove us from office. Attorney General Keith Paxton said we should be arrested on site, so they will likely have a call on the house today. And they will issue with warrants and we're not scared. We're fighting, man. We're standing on the right side of history, but the stakes are definitely higher. Gilbert, it's good that you collected out from 2021. We're not those fines. And not only that, these fines, you know, we cannot pay with campaign funds. So we can't say, oh, yeah, we'll just pay 405 campaign funds. No, they said you cannot use campaign funds to pay for these fines. And on top of that, if you don't pay for your fines, then your office staff budgets would be stripped.
Oh, my.
So you won't have any employees. So and then the worst part about it is there's a trigger that you could even lose your pension. So the stakes are very, very high. We're going to fight. We're going to fight it in the courts. We're going to fight it everywhere we can, especially the next election, the midterm elections. But right now we're trying to save, protect Congressman Al Green, the 18th congressional district in Houston, Silvio Garcia's district, that's been targeted, the 29th district, you know, in Houston. So it is awful what they're doing to our Democratic seats in the greater Houston area alone, but much less how they're doing it to more Black and Hispanic Texans than any other community. They were surgically targeted. It is downright racial gerrymander, Gilbert. And I hate to say that. Sometimes when we say it, people say, oh, he's playing the race card. It is what it is. If it walks like a duck, it cracks like a duck, it's a duck. What do you mean to say? Like it's a rabbit? No, it's a racial gerrymander. So when you hear Silvio Garcia and Al Green say it, it's because it is what it is. They testified that's what it was, and you look at the map, it's a damn jigsaw puzzle, man.
Well, you know what? I'd love to do this. We want to follow this, and yes. I hope that you and Representative Christina Morales or Senator Boris Miles, who, of course, I had them on the show a week or two ago, I hope y'all call in every Monday, because just give us it. We want a new one.
Because it's important to keep you sharing. Thank you for having this platform. I love being there live in the studio with me and Christina. We're able to guest host for you when you were away, I think, at the Dow Jones or something, the stock exchange.
Yes.
And so I just want to thank you for being such a good steward of the community and using this as a platform to engage and inform our community of current and relevant events that sometimes the mainstream media doesn't drill down on. So I just want to thank you for always being such a good corporate citizen with your resources. And I don't want you ever think we take you for granted, man. We really appreciate you so much, because we couldn't do it without our philanthropic, our business community. It takes a village. I mean, we're elected officials. We need grassroots people. Everybody plays a role in our democracy. So I just wanted to publicly thank you for having me on, and thank you, Daisy, for sending me the message. And certainly I'll take you up on the offer next Monday. And hopefully we're still safe and away from the state, because the session ends, this first call special session ends on August 19th. And it is our intention to run out the clock.
Well, I am holding you on the phone, and we wish you Godspeed, my friend.
Thank you, brother. All right. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you. Mike Nichols, one other thing I want to bring up, and that was very kind of him to call in, is, you know, we talked about the whole, if you have an emergency, $400, and that's one step away from homeless. But another one step away from homeless is, you know, being in an abusive marriage or abusive situation, an abusive home life, whether it's a spouse having no place to go to escape an abusive relationship and having children, or children in an abusive situation. How prevalent is that? I mean, isn't that pretty prevalent?
It is very prevalent. It's a two things we know it's prevalent. First, on the good side, Houston Harris County has a very solid program when people are homeless, when women are homeless because of marital issues and abuse. And a significant portion of the $70 million in federal money will go to help those women and keep them in temporary or permanent housing. So it's a really good issue. It is a separate system, but parallel. And the reason it's a separate system is because of the additional security that's needed for people who are experiencing spousal abuse.
Very interesting.
So that's one. The second issue is that, and this is really sad, there are not a significant number of women and families, too many, what is too many, but not a significant number of women and families experiencing homelessness when they look at the 3,000 people in the three county area who are experiencing homelessness. And the reason for that, and this is really sad, is that a mother would do anything to keep their children housed, including living with terrible people. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that would a problem with our society. We need to allow people to, if they're in an abusive situation, to be protected. And housing is part of that protection.
Wow. Very, very fascinating. That is why Houston, Harris County, that, you know, we said at the very beginning, it's a complex issue. Absolutely. It isn't just spend money, or it isn't just get the police department to do something. It takes all kinds of people. It takes creative thinking. It takes new solutions to do something differently. And that's why I'm glad we have Mike Nichols on the case. Michael, you got about 1 or 2 minutes here. That's the camera. Anything you want to say to Houston, Harris County, or if you want to give a shout out to your staff, because a lot are around and here, and I know it's a labor of love what they do. Anything you want to say?
And I think a shout out first to the staff at the Housing and Community Development Department. They really work hard. In 2020, there were as many as 350 staff members. They're now 170, which means they're working twice as hard. Mm-hmm. Shout out to them. Shout out to our partners. One of the ones I didn't shout out to is a much maligned partner, which is the Houston Housing Authority. The Houston Housing Authority has a new board appointed by the mayor and a fabulous new CEO, Jamie Brunt, who comes out of private business. And as a result of his faith, he took her in this job. He's doing a great job in a difficult, difficult scenario. And you will see great things out of the Houston Housing Authority. And again, to all the nonprofits who work in this area, it really is a labor of love, starting with my friends at the Coalition for the Homeless, who are out on the street day in, day out. Throw in some other ones, Houston Healthcare for the Homeless, treating people who are homeless. Carly Brown is the CEO of that organization. Wayne Young, who runs the Harris Center for IDD and Mental Health, making a huge impact on the city. More than 90,000 citizens in Harris County are positively impacted by Harris Center. Great organizations.
Wonderful. I appreciate that. And as you know, we're probably the same genre. There was a show, remember Carol Burnett? And at the end, she had that song, "I'm so glad we had this time together to say so long." It's already been an hour.
It seemed to go fast.
Isn't that unbelievable?
I loved it. And I love talking about these issues, and I like the interaction. And it's really interesting. And again, voting counts. When you look to the legislature, to Congress, this makes an impact. And tell them what you think about affordable housing and homelessness. It's very important.
Wonderful. I thank you for being here. And I want to bring you back.
My pleasure.
I think there's more to talk about. Houston, Harris County, this is Gilbert Garcia, a tick from Gilbert. Tip from me saying, we'll see you next time. This is Gilbert Andrew Garcia with a tip from Gilbert. Talk, inspiration, and prayer. Listen to my show every Monday from 11 to 12 on KWWJ, 1360 AM, KYOK, 1140 AM, KCOH at 1230KCOH.com, Sankeet Radio at 95.1 FM, 1460 AM, and Latina Sports, KEYH, 850 AM. Call in at 832-570-8075 and follow me on social media. See you then.